All right. The third case this morning for oral argument is Nguyen, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, versus Asset Acceptance.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Mina Shaheen on behalf of Kevin Nguyen. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for a rebuttal.
2 minutes. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thanks. What this court must decide is twofold, whether Mr. Nguyen was served and whether preclusion is applicable. Now, without service, the trial court had no jurisdiction to enter its default judgment. That is because a void judgment is absolutely null. The courts have emphasized strongly and repeatedly that when a judgment is void for the lack of jurisdiction, it must be vacated whenever that lack of jurisdiction comes to light. You can find that, for example, in Allied Fidelity Insurance versus Ruth. Now, regardless of the passage of time, the courts have found that it doesn't matter how long it's been, when a judgment is void, then it must be thrown out and vacated. Principles of preclusion or even discretionary factors, none of these have stopped a void judgment being vacated. Now that has come to the court's attention that Asset Acceptance improperly executed substitute service, the default judgment must be vacated. Now there is no evidence in the record at all that the Benefit Street address, the place where the summons and complaint was left, was Mr. Nguyen's place of abode on that date of service. Now, shown, Asset Acceptance had three possible addresses. Yes.
Deciding whether the evidence is clear and convincing to support the motion to vacate, do we look at the evidence presented by your client only, or do we look at how much evidence the other side has presented that, in fact, they have proper service as well and do a balance?
You look at all evidence, but Mr. Nguyen provides evidence that's unrefuted. It shows clearly and convincingly that not only that his address was elsewhere, that it was actually at Powell Street, not even in Seattle. He was in Renton, Washington. And this is shown with his tax returns from 2008, which was actually signed just 4 days before this date of service, swearing under penalty of perjury that his address was at Powell Street. I mean, that is definitive and clear enough. Now, the only evidence that is provided by Asset Acceptance is the affidavit of service, which can be discredited. And that affidavit of service, the process server said, I left it with someone at this address, and this address, Benefit Street, was Mr. Nguyen's address. But as we know from the evidence, they didn't even have any basis to say that that was his address, because they sent off the Powell Street address, the Benefit Street address, and one other address to the post office, and the post office said, sure, any of those could work. So they just picked at random. They had a 1 in 3 chance, and when they had a 1 in 3 chance, they actually were, Asset Acceptance instructed the process server, just go to the first one and leave it there with the warm body you find, you know, regardless, first attempt. And that's what they did. Now, the only other evidence that Asset Acceptance provides is a skip trace that shows among 7 possible addresses, you know, just all of these places over a long period of time that could have been his, Benefit Street was in there. But actually, the address, if you look at it, that's closest in time to the date of service that pops up closest in time is the Powell Street address. So that's the only thing Asset Acceptance provides. They have no actual evidence showing that that was his address. They guessed, and they were wrong.
On the collateral estoppel argument, is the appellant's position that they never reached the merits of this, or is it just unfair to apply collateral estoppel in this case?
Well, first of all, it's yes. Preclusion doesn't apply to situations where judgments are void, just period. But to argue even if preclusion could apply in a situation where judgment is void, in these previous motions, the first two elements of preclusion are clearly not met. There were not the identical issues, and it did not reach a judgment on the merits. Now, it's very important to talk about identical issues, because if you look at that first motion, there were no clear issues identified. The actual motion itself that was titled, this is the motion, the only argument presented in those two paragraphs was defendant doesn't owe any money. And then the portion labeled memo in support is nothing but a verbatim copy of CR 60. And under CR 60, there are actually 11 enumerated bases for vacating a judgment, yet there was no hint in the filing which basis this motion was brought under. There were even empty check boxes and nothing was checked. I mean, to say that that was sufficient to raise identical issues, that would be the same to say that that would preclude any bringing of any of those bases under CR60B, which is exactly what asset acceptance is arguing. So no particular issue was identified for the trial court to consider. And in
another question about preclusion, is it your position that preclusion never applies when there was a failure to serve in the outset?
Correct. It was a void judgment.
If your client hadn't appealed the decision the trial court made that we're reviewing, instead had waited another year and had filed the very same motion, would there still not be preclusion?
Well, the court has found that in situations where in Doe versus Fife Municipal Court, for example, the appeals court found that because the municipal court's judgment was void, the separate filing, the plaintiffs were not collaterally stopped from maintaining independent action to recover costs. The court also determined that it can be collaterally attacked.
You have where the exact same evidence can be presented twice to the trial court?
Well, first, if we're talking about was it the same evidence or issues, that is...
Just answer my
question. Yes.
We're going to write an opinion, and you've stated a very broad rule, and I'm skeptical that the rule is quite as broad as you have stated. Mm-hmm. That's the reason for my question, so don't hedge the answer. Do you have a case where that says that the exact same evidence can be presented twice if there was no service?
There are no cases that are exactly on point. However, there have been cases where motions to vacate have come up again in Colocorio versus Berger. Now, it's not exactly on point, but in the first motion to vacate, there were some procedural matters. It was the same information, but it didn't quite get to a hearing point, kind of like the first motion here. And then another motion was brought to vacate, and then that was later decided on that. And this issue didn't, what the question you're asking wasn't necessarily raised, but it's not as though this is an impossible situation.
Your better argument is the trial court never had the facts that you presented until you presented them. So this is really the first bite of the apple.
Under preclusion, yes. So even, talking about preclusion, it would not apply in this situation as well. Is there any questions regarding preclusion? Because as asset acceptance has the burden to show this, and they've clearly failed to do so, and
well,
as Mr. Wynn has provided.
Doesn't the appellant have the burden by clear, cogent, and convincing to show that the declaration of service is wrong?
To discredit it, right, through clear and convincing evidence, which in Volkick versus Anderson, the court said that unrefuted evidence is clear and convincing. And because of that, the lack of service, judgment was void, and the trial court's ruling should be reversed on this matter. Thank you.
You'll have 2 minutes in rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Erin Patterson, appearing for Asset Acceptance. Just to start off, in the trial court's ruling, or actually during the hearing, the court made it very clear that there was an assumption made by counsel over and over and over that the judgment was void, and we hear it again today. And as the court correctly indicated, we need to first get over the barrier of clear and convincing evidence. Why? Because the affidavit of an independent process server submitted in this case is evidence of valid service in our case. So
Other than the bald statement that I left this with someone at his place of abode, what evidence is there in the record that Mr. Wynn, in fact, lived at that address on the day of service?
The evidence that we relied upon is the affidavit of the service processor initially, obviously.
My question said beyond that.
Yes, of course. And that is backed by, this is an independent process service company, ABC Services, who does a search, TLO, skip tracing, postal traces, and the assertions by counsel that these were just picking a name out of a hat are in no way backed up.
Is it fair to say that one of them says it's one of these three and another one says it's one of these seven?
Yes.
Does that really prove any one of the three is more likely than the other two, or one of them is more likely than the other six?
Well, Your Honor, I can't speak to the accuracy of their investigation at that time.
As a fact finder, when you're presented with evidence that says he lives at one of these three, does that make one of them more likely than the other two?
Not necessarily. However,
and then when it's one of seven, does that make it one of them more likely than the other six?
Not necessarily.
And then there's an affidavit from someone at the address that he served, says, I was his landlord. He moved out before this time, and there's nothing to dispute that. How do you have evidence that refutes what he presented to the trial court?
I think, Your Honor, that we have to look at the declarations that were submitted. I don't believe they rise to the level.
Well, I just described what I think
Absolutely.
Is the evidence in those declarations, so that boilerplate statement doesn't really help us. What facts are in those declarations that refute the statement of the landlord that he didn't live here on this date?
The landlord, a declaration submitted nearly 6 years after service of process, indicates
facts,
that she...
What facts are there that she's not right?
I don't think that she actually brings any facts stating she is right. She says that she doesn't quite remember. She wouldn't remember if someone was speaking English and that he lived there sometime in 2008. But we don't have any documentation proving a lease agreement, a rental agreement, any mail that he actually received at a different address during that time.
Mail he sent to the federal government 4 days before he was served that says he lived somewhere else.
Which he filled out, Your Honor.
But
yes.
He signed it under penalty of perjury, and he did it at a time when he didn't know there was an issue such as presented in this case.
Purportedly, Your Honor, yes.
Well, purportedly, he couldn't have. He hadn't been served even under your version of the facts on that day.
The evidence presented by Mr. Nguyen includes a self-serving declaration wherein he states that for an unspecified amount of time in 2008, he did reside at the address where service was accomplished. He doesn't actually give parameters, specific parameters, for when he left that residence.
Well, he does say he wasn't there on the date in question, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Very plainly.
Yes, he does.
And he presents some evidence that corroborates that.
Yes, he does. However, I believe that evidence is insufficient, and so did the trial court. And
So you're saying the trial court weighed the evidence correctly?
Absolutely.
Do we reweigh it on appeal? It's de novo, right? So we could decide that
this court's position
goes the other way.
In Northwick is to review service of process de novo. I believe the three issues presented
by... It would be different if you had witnesses testifying.
Of course, and there was no request for an evidentiary hearing at the lower court. So here we are today with what was presented in court. And yes, it was the third bite at the apple, and this court's very aware of what is contained in the briefing. Ultimately, I believe that the judge and the trial court made the correct decision based on the facts presented, which we don't have anything. He did not provide in 9 years since the judgments entered. No further evidence, a pay stub from your employer going to that address, mail that actually went to that address.
Pay stub with an address on it?
Yes, if you're
getting pay stubs for over 40 years. My address has never been on any of them.
Mine is on mine. I apologize, Your Honor. any documentation during that time period, a change of address, a driver's license, something to show the veracity of his statements. We just have a self-serving declaration years later, a declaration from someone who admits that she doesn't quite remember what happened, doesn't know, and wouldn't remember if they just spoke English. And then we have a tax document prepared by him. He had three times to do this, and the sufficiency of the evidence presented, I need to correct the record, in that he did state on page 5, line 7 of his motion that he believed service was improper in that very first motion in 2012. And then he brought the motion again in 2013 before the wrong judge, who instructed him at that time that he would dismiss without prejudice, so that if he felt he needed to bring that motion again, and if he hadn't raised the issue of service of process, that he could do so in front of the correct judge. He waited 3 years to bring the third motion. So then... No, Your Honor.
Would you agree with counsel's representation that challenge is always available?
Not if it has been raised, has been fully litigated.
I mean, if for the first time, the passage of time has never been held to bar raising that issue.
If the issue has not been fully litigated, yes, absolutely. I believe that this was fully litigated. It was litigated. Okay, of course. It was litigated, and it was litigated again and again. And here we are in 2016, now 2017, on the same issue, which rolls us into equitable estoppel. And my client will absolutely be affected detrimentally based upon any overturn of the trial court's ruling, as we are so many years from the date of judgment. We have no ability to go back and try to get further evidence. We have no ability to move forward. We would, if our only option would be to dismiss the action because it's out of the statute of limitations. My client... Yes, of course, as it stems from a judgment. So if the judgment was overturned, it would be dismissed, and then we would return any funds that were garnished. Here we stand today. I do believe that it was not reasonable for Mr. Nguyen to now state that he got bad advice in 2012 and then decided to go again in 2013 and then waited an extended period of time to come back before the court on the same exact issue. Further, I don't believe that the evidence was sufficient. Neither did the trial court in their ruling in weighing the evidence. And I think as we stand here today, it would be...
On your equitable estoppel argument, the harm is that you wouldn't get to keep Mr. Wynn's money?
My client would have absolutely no recourse for a valid debt.
All right, the valid debt is presumably purchased from the credit card company.
Yes, that's correct.
A significant discount.
I do not know what they purchased the debt for, but they own the debt.
They don't either.
And they have the right to collect.
So the inequity is the running of the statute of limitations in the meantime?
Yes, and the fact that now we're so many years past, there's no reason.
And there's no basis for tolling under these facts?
No. And ultimately, as I'm sure you saw in the brief, we weren't even able in 2012 to go back and get a further statement from the process server due to the fact that he'd left the ABC process server.
If the second proceeding didn't raise the issue and everyone concedes that, your success turns on the first pleading having intimated that service wasn't effective. Is that correct?
Correct. If we were looking at abuse of discretion.
The words were used and insufficient evidence was there and it wasn't appealed.
Correct. And I mean, that to that point, Mr. Nguyen over and over he's portrayed as someone who doesn't understand the court system. However, this court knows we have to hold pro se litigants to a certain standard. They have to be held to the same standard as attorneys, for the most part, when they're litigating. And he did not just file three separate motions to vacate this judgment. He also filed an FDCPA lawsuit against my client, which is included in the materials, which is a very sophisticated document in which we had to defend. So we've been hailed into court multiple times on essentially the exact same issues.
Sufficiency of process issue involved in that litigation?
No.
So what bearing does that have on the issue?
Just going to his understanding of the legal process, his involvement in the legal process.
Do you agree with you that he's held to the same standard as a lawyer? It doesn't matter, does it?
No. But ultimately, that would be his fourth bite at the apple by coming back and back to court. And my client has to repeatedly defend against the vacating of this judgment. And Mr. Nguyen has not put anything new. In my opinion and in the court's opinion, Mr. Nguyen did not bring evidence that was sufficient to meet the burden of clear and convincing. So we do not even get to a void judgment standard. Right now, today, that judgment is valid. And we can't just jump over that hurdle. And unfortunately, that's what counsel has attempted to do repeatedly. And it is my opinion and the opinion of the trial court that this is valid and it stays in place. And I would ask that you affirm that ruling today.
Should we be concerned about how the service was affected if the landlord did not speak English, could not communicate back to the process server?
In the service
that this wasn't his address or understand for what purpose it was provided?
Ultimately, ideally, I wish I could have had an affidavit of the service processor expanding on what occurred on that day, GPS information about where they were, any further information about their discussion with the person they left the documentation with. We only have the affidavit of service to go off of, which does not indicate that that she did not speak English and she did accept the documentation. Thank you.
You have 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I'm trying to be brief. Just a couple follow-up points. It seems that asset acceptance is arguing in terms of the clear and convincing evidence that one piece of evidence isn't enough or two pieces isn't enough. And I don't know what standard they're trying to raise here, but I mean, all we really need is any unrefuted piece of evidence showing that his address wasn't at Benefit Street, for example, as a tax return. And I want to point out that, you know, relying on the service of process affidavit is not consistent with the way the courts have ruled with regards to void judgments. Look, for example, in Connie, where there was just an affidavit of service which stated explicitly that they took it there, they handed it to somebody, and that person said, oh, yes, that person lives here, he's sleeping. And all they needed was a declaration from the landlord who said, no, that person was not living here at that time, and that was sufficient.
So part of the equitable concern here is waiting until, despite continued garnishment activity, waiting until the statute of limitations is gone and then trying to raise a jurisdictional issue for another time?
Actually, that's actually not true. So this breach of contract claim, which all starts from, is based on alleged credit card debt, and the last date of payment was actually 2005, and Asset Acceptance points this out in their briefing. So the statute of limitations was in 2011, and they did not start garnishing Mr. Nguyen until 2012, and there is no evidence saying otherwise or any argument that he did not become aware of this until 2012, after the statute of limitations had passed. So by the time he got involved, they had already been unable to go back and, let's say, refile or file against someone else. So there's actually no prejudice against Asset Acceptance through any actions.
His first appearance was after the statute of limitation?
That's correct. And if there is any uncertainty with regards to the preclusion issues, courts have stated that uncertainty itself would mean that collateral estoppel should not apply.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
The fourth